Good morning, everyone. So following Guylaine's update on IT project, we can see that we have many projects to work on in 2015 and for the next 5 years. So one thing for sure, this will lead to a lot of change within ITS and within the Miguel community. So comme on dit en français, il n'y a pas plus permanent que le changement. Alors, it's a great pleasure for me to introduce our guest speaker today, Mrs. Karine Joly. Karine Joly oversees the development of professional development curriculum for higher ed experts, which is an online school for digital professionnel and executive working on higher education that she founded in 2007. So she also taught the Capstone graduate course, which is an MBA in social media marketing at Southern New Hampshire University. It's a course that she designed, authored for the SNHU, which is an online program. She's been teaching an online professional certificate course on social media marketing and for higher education at Higher Ed Experts also since 2011. So Karine has started insights about emerging web and social media trends on the college webeditor.com, so you will have the reference to go and visit what it is, which is a popular independent blog since 2005. She also being an author of the Internet Technology column since 2006 for the University Business, which is a monthly magazine read by more than 45,000 university leaders. So Karine has presented on digital trends, social media marketing, web analytics, online courses at leading higher education, some conferences. So mostly she did presentation at UB Tech, CASE, American Marketing Association Symposium for Higher Ed, EduCom, EduWeb, CU Prep, and High Ed Web and PCE Web. So Karine will talk to us today about the number of changes, mostly the new trending, the now trending for generation, expectation in higher education. So this presentation will invite you to explore these changing trends and their transformation impact on some institutions of higher education in North America. So please join me to welcome Karine Joly for this presentation.
So good morning, everybody. I'm just going to try to find my... Will you do that for me? Thank you. Okay, good morning, everybody. I'm super excited to be here this morning with you for two reasons. First, I've been speaking at many higher ed conferences for the past few years, but this is the first time I get to speak in Montreal, and this is really a treat for me, so thank you for having me. The second reason why I'm so excited to be here this morning is that I love McGill. I'm not an alum myself, but I'm married to one, and if all goes according to plan, I'm the mother of at least one future student. My 9-year-old has had his eye on McGill for a very long time. Yeah, believe me. And we think, my husband and I, we think that he caught the McGill bug after taking part in a research project of the Infant Development Center here at McGill. He was not even a year old. And as you can see, we did save the piece, you know, the little certificate. So, you know, we are like definitely running for McGill. Anyway, you might wonder what qualifies me to talk about change in technology and higher education. That would be besides my last name, because, you know, as Montrealer, you know that Melanie has opened that door for all of us in the Joly team. You know, I'm not related to her, but more seriously, I've been focusing on change and digital technology-driven change in higher education for the past 10 years. And this all started, I do that now as part of my of my work for Hired Experts, like which is a professional online school. And if you actually want to teach people, you better know what's coming and what you need to help them with. But everything started 10 years ago with that blog, College Web Editor. I was at that time in charge of the web for a college. And it all started in 2005. We celebrated the 10th anniversary earlier this year. And it was an opportunity for me to look back at the past decade and at the more than 1,000 posts I've written about best practices, new technology, and find out, you know, what happened and what was changed and what was like just passing fads. And something that I discovered by looking at all those posts, you know, to be frank, I didn't read the whole 1,000 posts that were written, but what I discovered is that 10 years ago, it really, technology change used to be pushed onto people, often in spite of people, needs and expectation. There was a release, there was something new, so no matter if people wanted to get that technology or not, they will get it. Nowadays, today, it's a bit different. Technology change is really driven by people's expectation and people's needs. And, you know, it is, as an IT professional, I'm sure you know, it is quite challenging because now it's really, you really have to play catch up with what they want and what they would want tomorrow. So that's why we're going to talk a bit about people and the different generation and how they use technology. Because I'm in front of a room full of techies, you're going to bear with me for a sec, and we're all going to become Trekkies, Star Trek fans, for just 4 or 5 minutes. So it will be less boring than to share just, you know, boring, not boring, but, you know, data points are not like the most exciting things. So I've tried to talk about generation by using Star Trek. So we have 4 generations currently at play in universities nowadays. The baby boomers, that will be represented by the original Captain James T. Kirk on the right. Anybody not familiar with Star Trek here? No, we're good. I thought I would just ask. Generation Xers, represented here by Captain Picard, Jean-Luc Picard. Then the millennials, that are also called the Generation Y, will be our young Captain James T. Kirk. And for Generation Z, that you might not have heard about yet, we will use that little Lego figurine that was customized by a Lego fan. This is quite nice. So, baby boomers, this is the biggest generation. They were born just after the Second World War because everybody was happy. Everybody had a lot of babies. And it looks like the Americans were even happier than the Canadians, as you can see. So they are aged between 50, 51, and 70. Well, you know, the years, depending on the authors, on the people, it's really going to always, like, vary. But, you know, just to give you an idea, anybody over 55 is part of the baby boomers. Some people define, like, younger and older baby boomers. We will focus on the younger baby boomers in this presentation this morning. Generation Xers are a small generation, the 40, more or less in their 40s. They constitute a fifth of the U.S. population, a bit less in Canada. I was kind of surprised in Canada and Quebec. I was kind of surprised, but that's the way it is. Millennials, they are the kids of the baby boomers. We know, I'm sure you've read many articles or seen many TV shows talking about this generation. It's the second biggest generation, a quarter of the total U.S. population, and about a fifth of the Canadian and Quebec's population. And they have left college. So attention, millennials have just left the university, unless they pursue graduate studies, obviously. But the kids currently in college, the undergrad who are currently studying, are not, according to authors and observers, are not part of this generation anymore. They are the Generation Z or Zier, who are under 24 year old. Here, like with those numbers, I didn't find the American numbers, but here you can see, and here it's like really like under 24, my sons, or any 1 year old would be in that group, although, you know, we might see in the future it might be a different type of generation. So, looking at online usage and how those different generations use the internet, I think we can all see that there isn't like, you know, older people don't use the internet. Because it was kind of a meme at some point. The baby boomers, whether they are young or old, 82% of them are online and using the internet. As you can see, usage increase as people get younger. But we can really see that internet has become ubiquitous. And for the younger group, this is like American data here, 96%. Something is really interesting here. The Pew Research Center released a study about teens and how they use the web, mobile, social media. And so what they found is that 92% of the 13 to 17 years old, who will be our future students, are on the internet daily, and a quarter constantly relying on the internet as, you know, as much as they would with running water. So what's trending with all those generation and all their needs? How are they using technology? I think we can all agree. Anybody has one of these? I guess so. Who hasn't one of these? Okay. Okay, so we definitely, I think we all agree, but I guess you're not like quite representative of the total population working in IT, but this is really becoming a fact of life. Mobile is not an option, it's not a nice to have, this is something mandatory now, because people are using it more and more. And if you look at smartphone ownership here, you see that the boomers, you know, even the boomers have majority of them are now smartphone users, and then smartphone ownership increase with as the age decrease. Those kids, you know, I'm not sure they own it, but they have access. Three quarter of the Generation Z folks have access to a smartphone, and I looked at the evolution of smartphone ownership over the past 2 or 3 years, and this is really crazy. Like the increase has been really concentrated on just 2 or 3 years. So this is really going to become bigger. And it's even going to become bigger because I don't know if you've heard, maybe like the folks who manage the website are more aware of that. But just last week, Google released its mobile friendly date, which means that from now on, if your website or your web application is not mobile friendly, doesn't display nicely, but is more looking like that, you will disappear from Google mobile search results. And while more and more people are using that and are using that to search, it means that not having some work done on your website could be very costly for any business, institution, universities. And speaking about universities, we at Higher Ed Expert, we've been running a data project that we call the Higher Ed Analytics Benchmarking Report. We are using data that is available from Google Analytics. And here you see like the channels, the different channels driving new users to Canadian University last month. And the sample is, we're talking about 1,600, a bit more than 1,600 websites from Canadian and post-secondary school, and you see organic search is the main driver of new traffic, 38%. So, you know, not being on mobile is definitely something a university cannot afford anymore. So mobile is nice, but it's not enough, because we want to have access to the content, to the news, to the service, to the web application from any device at any time and from, you know, anywhere. And as you can see, your team in charge of the website was just mentioning that this morning to Shannon, has done a beautiful work making that beautiful website responsive and usable on any type of device. So, you know, kudos to you, McGill. It's really a beautiful piece of responsive website. I was talking about like the different type of devices people use. So here is some data from the CEFRIO. I'm sorry, it's just in French. But basically here you have like, I was talking about the progression of ownership. Well, it's like just the past 5 years. So we went from 17 to 52% smartphone ownership. For the tablet, we went from 7% to 40%, and here, you know, it goes with like different, this is like the iPhone, the iPod, or, you know, like the likes and e-readers, and now with TVs, you know, people really access the internet from anywhere. And if we looked at, again, a bit more at the type of devices that people use when they go on Canadian website, and this is for the month of March, you can see that the computer, the laptop are still out there. They are, you know, still accounts for more than three quarter of the traffic, of all traffic to a Canadian university website. So the multi-device approach is something that is really critical for your website, that your web application, anything you want people to have access to within the university. And one of the consequences, and your CEO mentioned that you are like rolling out something like that, people, because they want to have access to their files anytime, anywhere, the more and more universities are offering services to their students, their faculty, their staff, so that those files, those content can be uploaded to the cloud and accessible from anywhere. Google has been doing that with many universities for more than 5 years now, and Microsoft is now offering the same type of service, really making this access to content universal. Third point, third important trend is social media. It's not breaking news. I'm sure you're aware of that. But I said that the internet and the web is now like running water. Social media is the new electricity. And it's funny because Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook, always said in the early years, like 10 years ago, the early years, he always said that he wanted to make Facebook a utility. And I think that he kind of succeeded it in doing that. And social media, if you look at social media usage about for the past decade, this is data from the Pew Research Center, you can see this is kind of interesting. And if I zoom in, in only 10 years, we went from 0% to 75% for all internet users. It goes even up to 79% for the younger user. So social media is definitely the new electricity, something that is part of the daily life of the students, the faculty, maybe less the faculty, no, the staff. So this is like really something important. Look at social media usage across the generation. Again, some people said, oh, social media is just for like the young kids and not like the older or the senior people, not senior people, but like the older generation. And as you can see, three quarter of the baby boomers in Quebec use social media. Here, it's American data, so, you know, you cannot like totally compare it to the data from Quebec, but there is like something interesting here. I think it can be explained by two reasons. You know, why not, you know, at 100% or more? Why just 76%? I think it can be explained by two reasons. First one, in this group, you have kids who, you know, don't always decide what they are going to do, what they can do. I know that my son cannot like decide if he's going to be on social media or not. And then second point, there is in the older member of that generation, so the older teens, like the really like the prospective students, they tend to still be on social media, but it seems that they are moving progressively to use more mobile apps like WhatsApp, Snapchat, sometimes Yikyak. So it looks like there is a move, maybe not totally away from like the social media platform that broadcast information, to more like a communication of one-on-one communication with through those mobile apps. So again, mobile, really something that you want to keep on your radar. Social media is so important and has been so important that I guess, you know, all institutions of higher education in North America and even across the world have jumped on this bandwagon, and many institutions have used social media to engage their prospective students, current students, alums, donors. I'd just like share like a few examples of a social media hub from the University of Michigan, Harvard, and MIT, but I could find, you know, thousands of those type of pages. Social media is definitely a tool to communicate and market, sometimes market to people, to constituents from higher ed institutions. Video. Anybody watching video online? Anybody not watching video online? Okay. I have to come clear. I don't have TV at home. I haven't had TV for the past 5 years. Well, I have a TV set, but it's just connected to an Apple TV box, so I don't have cable. And all the TV we view is through the internet, Netflix, services like that. We used to be in a very small minority, but the cutting the cord for the TV is also like really increasing around. And so this is for entertainment purposes, but video, there is something magic about video, and the main social media platform have learned it because they looked at the success of YouTube. YouTube, only 10 years old and so successful, you can watch, you know, you can, the whole population can spend his whole life watching watching video on YouTube. And then the social media platform, I've understood that the younger generation love videos, so they are like starting to push, to make a big push for videos on their platform. Facebook is really making a big move. I don't know if there are any Facebook users in the audience, but if you looked at your feed, your news feed recently on Facebook, you see all those videos like auto-playing, this kind of scary, but this is really something that is going to stay. And this is the reason why, because people do watch across generation, again, a bit less. The older they are, the less they're gonna watch online video. But still, you know, when you look at millennials, this big generation, you see that there is definitely a move toward watching more video online, and even on smartphones. And here, you know, when you see that smartphone ownership, and you correlate that with this kind of video activity on the mobile phone, you see how important video is going to become, is already, and will even and will become even more important in the next few years. Just going to change, so I don't ignore too much that part of the room. Sorry for that. I found a study about how video is used within higher education. It's a study, a white paper that was done by SAGE, which is a publisher and partner of academic libraries. And so this study, they did a study with roughly 2,000 students attending different institutions, undergrad and graduate. And so here is what they... Sorry. Here is what they say when they were asked if they were watching videos. And as you can see, video has made a big entry in the classroom. 68% of them report watching a video in class, while 79% say that they are not just watching video outside of class, but watching video to further their understanding of a topic from class or to learn something. So really, video has become a channel, a medium to learn nowadays. And video, what is more fun than video and real time? Live streaming. This is like really more an emerging trend here, but some applications have started to pop up. I'm pretty sure that you're familiar with the video chat that we can have using FaceTime, Skype, and even Google Hangout. But there are also applications that have been launched that will allow you to live stream to a wider audience, to broadcast, to be your own, like, you know, TV channel, broadcasting, whatever you want to broadcast. Google Hangout on air has become an interesting tool for the desktop. Periscope and Meerkat are like the darling now of the early adopters. I don't know if they will stick, but basically, you know, I could like just open my mobile phone and just by the push of a button, I could like, you know, live broadcast you over the internet. And I'm sure that a lot of people will actually join because there are like a lot of outlookers right now on Periscope. What's nice with Periscope is that the people watching can send you some feedback. They can send you some messages. They can send you some arts. This is so nice. So this is something that's not quite there yet, but definitely in the horizon. I was talking about Google Hangout on Air. Duke and many other universities have used those to have like admission live chat. Duke did that with I think they did like six or eight different live chat with a current student answering, being there live to answer questions from prospective students. This is also used for office hours. The team in charge, I don't know if there are people, member of the team that was in charge of the development of the MOOC, the Body Matters. Are there any in the room who worked on that? Wow. Congratulations, it was like really a beautiful work. So I know that you guys had some Google Hangout for type of office hours for that MOOC. And this is used like not just for MOOCs, but, you know, across the board by different institutions. I have a problem with my clicker. Video, live streaming, social media, you know, it seems like all fuzzy and nice and like a great way to waste time. But it's more than that. And many institutions have started to run those 24-hour giving day that are mainly run online. And here's an example of Cornell. They did that at the end of March. And during 24 hours, they had like, you know, a donation drive. And they use social media, they use, you know, email, they use video, they were live streaming for 24 hours, having like different people talk about, you know, interesting project at Cornell. And the result of those 24 hours were actually almost 7 million raised from almost 10,000 different donors. So all that technology is not just like for the fuzzy and warm feeling, it can lead to real results, you know, 7 million 24 hours, that's kind of nice. As I've hinted a bit earlier, you have more and more people learning online. This is not breaking news. You have, you know, obviously the MOOCs, the massive open online courses have been everywhere for the past 3 years. They were supposed to kill everything in higher education. They haven't. That's good. There have been like a very interesting development with a few different platforms: Coursera, Udacity, FutureLearn from the UK, who is really doing like a beautiful work, and edX, obviously. And you guys worked with OpenEdX on a couple of MOOCs. What MOOCs have really done is not kill higher education, but what they've done is they put the focus on online teaching and online learning. And because there is like such a big work on trying to use the data that is generated by those millions, thousands, hundreds of thousands of students taking those courses, that there is like some interesting research that is starting to pop up. So that's one of the contributions of the MOOCs. But beyond the MOOCs, more and more institutions are moving and launching and developing online programs, and because there is a need from the busy people, the busy adults who really want to advance their career and want to learn more without, you know, having to leave their job or their family. So online degree programs have been very successful. I worked a bit for Southern New Hampshire University. I think that maybe 10 years ago, they were like a small residential college with maybe like 3,000 students. Nowadays, they have like above 50,000 students studying online, 200 programs. They've become like so huge. They are often called like the for-profit of the non-profit. They are generating, they are like educating people, but they are like doing it in such a way, in such an efficient way that they are very successful, and they really, you know, the growth exploded. And their president, President Leblanc, is on leave right now, and he works at the White House for a few months to help the White House work on, you know, on workforce learning programs. So there is like definitely something here showing that you can be like start from very small and within a few years through technology and the good use of technology become one of the major players in higher education nowadays. And I don't know if you saw that or if you're familiar with that publication, University Affairs, that is like the publication from the Canada University Association, and they just did a feature in their last issue about online program, online offering, and it seems that it was interesting because they look at 10 years ago what happened and what's the difference today, and they basically come to the conclusion that 10 years ago online learning was really focused in a few online schools, you know, or universities that were like just doing online, like TELUC, University of Athabasca in Alberta, Royal Roads in British Columbia. But nowadays, more and more institutions are releasing a new online program, most of them releasing like professional master's degree program targeting adult learners who want to advance their career. So more and more I'm learning, but more and more are teaching online. And it's not just like the traditional university or college or professional school. Nowadays, everybody is teaching online through like platforms like Udemy, who, you know, basically allow anybody to create a course. It's heavily based on video, and then like sell it. Lynda.com has been in the news recently, and I'll talk about that later, but they are like providing courses to develop professional skills. You might be, are you familiar with Lynda.com? Because I know some institution are clients of that website. McKinsey, the consulting company, Flatiron School, it's kind of a coding school, so that one is not online, but it's basically, they have like 3-month program where they will teach you like professional skills. And Udacity and, you know, us hired experts, this is my plug. But I wanted to talk about McKinsey Academy. McKinsey is a consulting company that is, you know, present around the world. They work with corporate America and corporate everywhere, mainly on management consulting mission. But 2 years ago, they decided to develop that program. And they are actually using a branch of OpenEdX to do that, and they are offering it's not quite a MOOC because it's not as big as a MOOC. They have like cohort of about 100 people from different companies joining and really learning online together, and it's a for-profit, and they seem to be making quite a bit of money with the pilot because they are developing it and hiring more folks. So my point here is that today, competition, You know, I know it's not like really a good word, but many people, many organizations are going to move onto the learning market, including those folks who are now are working with their clients, but might be the, you know, an interesting alternative to an MBA in the future. I mentioned Linda. They got acquired by LinkedIn for $1.5 billion. That's very nice. Linda.com was it's a 15 or 20 years old company that was created by an instructional designer. So it's very nice. They have they were bought by LinkedIn because it's a way. It's the not the last step, but the next step in realizing the vision Reid Hoffman had. For LinkedIn. He's one of the co-founders of LinkedIn. And in September 2013, he wrote this post titled Disrupting the Diploma. And in this very long post, he made the case that, you know, higher education was broken and that there was a need for something new. I mean, he was not the only one to say that, and he's not the only one to say that right now. But there was a need to move from the university diploma that you get once at some point in time, you know, when you're young, to the accredited profile. It's more I labeled it this way, my words, not his, where you would basically be able to have like a living and breathing kind of resume, where like when you take a course, you know, you'll be able to show that you take that course through badges and like really prove to potential employers that you've learned more and you've taken some professional development courses. And if you look at the LinkedIn profile, mine here, that vision is really becoming a reality. Here at the top, you have like my diploma, my master and bachelor from the university I attended. And there, because I take all our courses, I mean, I try to take all as many courses as possible from hired experts. So those are like listed as education in the same, and just above like the certificate I took at Rutgers. So it's in the same place. And just above certification from Coursera, which is a MOOC provider. So for a prospective employer, this is really a good, giving a good picture of what I know today, what I've learned, and it includes my university diplomas, but also all the rest. So in that context, there are like institutions, you know, are really working on trying to work on innovation, new ideas, creating a new partnership. And I wanted to talk about three of them. You might have heard about Georgia Tech Master of Computer Science that was priced in the $700 or $800, all online, done in partnership with AT&T and Udacity, which is one of the MOOC provider. They launched that a year ago, and I've read an article, like, you know, looking at progress on that specific cohort, and students have been very pleased. It's too early to say if it's going to be successful because we have to wait on an extra year, but this is really something that is a possible way, like, to partner with a MOOC platform to deliver online education in a different way. And here it's more than just partnering with the MOOC platform; they also partner with a big company that invested more than $2 million on that project because they were interested in hiring, you know, in qualifying their workforce. PACE is a program that was launched or actually revealed like just a couple of months ago. It's from the University of Florida online branch. And in Florida, due to budget issues, they have like a capacity issue to welcome freshmen. So they decided that they actually admitted this year 3,000 freshmen. On one condition, they will have to do their freshman year totally online through UF Online at a fraction of the cost than a residential year would have cost them. But as you can see, they are like really something. They are like working on trying to see if online education is a viable solution for either like college kids nowadays, and we'll see if they succeed or not later. EdX also launched something targeted to college freshmen just last week. They call that the Global Freshman Academy, and this is done in partnership with Arizona State University. And in this specific case, any student can like just pay for a verified tech. There are like eight MOOCs, I think, that are developed by Arizona State University professors and that are part of the freshman year at this institution. And if you pay, you know, it could be I, it could be you, pay like the $50 fee to get a verified MOOC certificate, and then you succeed in that MOOC, you can, after the fact, pay an extra fee to get the credit, and basically you have the opportunity to do your whole freshman year online through MOOCs, but only if you succeed. So it's kind of a different model. People have criticized a bit that model because there is something that prevents students to actually getting some federal aid if it's done this way. But, you know, universities, institutions in the US, in the UK, and around the world are definitely trying new things and trying to adapt to the needs and to the change that is coming our way. So the future. I wish I had a crystal ball. I don't. But the way I see things is, I mean, if you had asked me like 5 years ago what was the future of the university, I would have said, might not be bright. But then, you know, I've just realized that I've changed my mind, and because I see that there is an opportunity, a big opportunity for universities, and because we live nowadays in a world of options, you know, whether you want to get entertain, waste time, communicate, you know, we have like all those options. But we still have the same amount of time, 24 hours in a day, that's it. And because of that, you know, the difference between what we can do or what we should do, what we want to do, and you know, the time we have to achieve everything, it creates, you know, cognitive overload. And there is, I think, in the future, people are going to look for guidance and for a way to sift through all the possibilities, some help. And I think that the university can be a place if, you know, if institutions embrace change and really try to go not to go with the flow, but like really to embrace change, they have this opportunity to be those guiding posts, those lighthouse that can be trusted by people, because you know there is something emotional about an institution of higher education. And I'm going to finish on that note. I mentioned SNHU. So they are like totally online, more than 50,000 online student, undergrad and graduate students. But right now, and for the next, I think they've been on the road for like 6 or 8 weeks, they do like a road trip and they go meet, you know, in different American cities. They go meet their students and they often go, when they can, deliver the diploma to the student who cannot attend the ceremony because they are online and because, you know, they have family and jobs and this is not a possibility. And they've posted like a lot of videos about those diploma delivery they've made, and there is like so much emotion that, you know, I think that there might be something to that piece of paper. Even if you study online, even if you study, you know, part of your studies are going to be online, even if there is a mix. That piece of paper is something. And I guess, you know, maybe that's why we saved that piece of that little diploma from my son, because it means something. It means that there is a connection. And this is where, by serving students, serving faculty, staff, you can help nurturing that connection that will make a huge difference in the future. And that's it. Thank you so much for listening to me. any questions? Yes.
You talked about the different stats for mobile usage and things like that. Are the different generations using the devices differently?
I don't know, but I can take a guess. I think yes, they are, and especially the younger, like the teens. When you look at the, I mentioned Snapchat earlier as one of the applications that is used more and more by teens. Like 41% of the American teens use that, and it's an application that's like just like two or three years old. When you look at the way this application is built, I'm kind of, you know, I'm a heavy technology user, social media, I know, you know, but there is like definitely a learning curve for me to use that app. So I think that there is something that might require some explanation or like just better design. Will go with younger generation. I also see, you know, the way my sons, you know, it's a focus group of two, but I see how they interact and I see, you know, how their friends interact. And this is like really like the, you know, the smartphone or the tablet is really something that they are used to it. Even if they don't have one at home, they can very quickly find out how it's used. So I guess, you know, this one is easy to use, but even when it's not easy to use, they still manage to use it. Video is very important. It's there are surely differences in the way they use it. They might not use the phone. My son doesn't know how to use. I mean, he knows, but you can see that he is his friend and him are totally not used to using a phone, having a conversation on the phone. But they will be like, you know, it will be easier for them like to communicate or to play online. You know, something that would be like quite challenging because I'm not a player. I'm not an online player, a game player. But it will be challenging for me to play online. But then, you know, they can like be at different places and. They play together, it's not challenging. However, using a phone is challenging. So yes, I guess, you know, there are like changes and differences among generation, although I don't have like specific data on it, just anecdotal data. Yes. You know what? That stigma was like really strong when online meant for profit. Because like the for profit, you know, they did like a huge, great work. I don't know about the, you know, the teaching, but in terms of marketing, they were like there, they were present. And so they basically owned the online learning market for, you know, five to 10 years. So yes, that stigma was there. But as soon as, you know, school like Penn State, Arizona State, it's a public school, enter the market, and the non-profit enter the market, thus that stigma faded. Because, you know, today, anyway, for most of the job, being digital literate is something that is expected by employers. So there is not that stigma anymore. But I remember even like institutions 10 years ago, traditional institution, not want to do online advertising, because the for-profits were doing a lot of online advertising and they didn't want to be, you know, they didn't want the confusion to happen. But now I think we moved from that, and there might be like for like younger kids, maybe like for the BA, like, you know, like the college age kids, we might not be there, but definitely for professional masters, or for, you know, adults going to get a BA or a master, it's really faded. You know, then I'm not in the hiring committee. There are like always. I know that McGill or any institution of higher education will probably look, you know, if you are looking for employment in an institution of higher education, then it's always better to have, like, you know, a diploma from a brick and mortar institution. And if you can even have that diploma from the institution you're trying to work to get a job from, this is even better. But it's changing. You know, the millennials, as we've seen, who are using all those and who are learning online, who are using all those technology as if it were, like, you know, anything, nothing new, they are starting to get managerial position. They are starting to be in hiring committees. So for them, there is, like, really something that has, we are going to have a shift that would be, like, driven by that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And devices. Mm-hmm. How would you prioritize design and usability when it comes to online education?
How would I prioritize? I think it's important. Like, the bare minimum is really to make sure that anything is accessible from any device. So going, if it's going to be web-based, going like the responsive design way. And then making sure that your videos, because most of the online education program are going to include videos, make sure that they can be viewed on any type of device. And I know that when we launched our courses, our online courses, like 4 years ago, it was a challenge, you know, because we had to switch providers for the videos, because the technology our current, at that time, our provider was using would not play well on a tablet or on a mobile phone. And people might not, not everybody might study on a mobile phone, but I know that when I take a course, the tablet is definitely something I use, and because I'm lucky with the Apple TV, sometimes I just, like, you know, beam the video to the TV, and it really feels as if I'm in a lecture hall. So, yes, responsive and making sure that the video are displaying. Like, for if you really want, like, something more specific, that's not my specialty. I mean, I know enough to be dangerous, but maybe not to be, like, super helpful on that specific point. Any other questions? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Many of us in this room work in administrative applications. And I wonder if you could tell us what the trends are in terms of, I mean, still the large universities are still based on their ERPs and things like that. But how is that changing? Is it moving towards software as a service? Are universities going to be expected to deliver those kinds of HR applications, finance applications, student applications like registration? What's the trends in that?
Okay. So I'm going to give you an answer, but I don't think it's like an expert answer. So I will give you an observer of the industry, an answer from an observer of the industry. What I've seen is that, especially in the US, institution being like really put under a lot of stress, budget-wise, definitely for the public institution with, you know, like the states reducing their participation, but even across the board with, like, that bigger generation leaving college. So now, you know, we are, like, we are reaching a point where enrollment, the demographic, is just decreasing. So what they've tried to do is I've tried to, like, not just focus on what was really essential and core to running the university. So anything, for example, emails, you know, big and small institution, when Google came and knocked at their door and say, hey, you want us to take care of email for your student body and faculty? And, you know, it will be free or very cheap. You know, everybody run that way. Then there is, like, a move toward making, when you have a technology, it has to be integrated so it works smartly, and automate what can be automated, because, you know, even like regular people, individuals, nowadays there are like applications where you can automate everything. Everything, you know, if you have like a, if you set up a, an appointment and you want it to be published or added somewhere, or you want to, you publish a photo and you want it to be published somewhere, there are like those little applications that are available through through the web that will help you connect different applications that were developed and not meant to work together, but now through different APIs are working together. So yes, institutions are. Tend to focus on what its core and let the rest be done by people, you know, who do that better, but not trying to provide every, you know, every single things on, you know, on that students or faculty would want. They are like looking for external partners, and they are lucky because sometimes it's like just free, so free is always nice, but if they keep the responsibility for a piece, they really try to go the integrated way and stop working in those, you know, different silos. So an observer, you know, an answer for an observer, but this is like really something, it's a different world. Last question? Oh, yes.
To look through, to review. What's our best way of presenting that to them? Should we be going towards video? Should we be, you know, historically it, there's been text and then you try to make it searchable and more point form, but is that the wrong vehicle? Is this new group looking for video?
I would say that this is really getting tougher and tougher, but it all depends on the type of information you have to provide them. Something that I've noticed that's very important is to provide the information at the right time. If you provide the information at the time where the student really need that specific piece of information, you'll get a better chance for them to actually look at it. And so like just bundling everything, you know, in a package, here's like, you know, I don't know, like 30 or 20 pages, or even like 30 or 20 videos, watch that now, you might not get, you know, as much engagement, and they might not read that information. But like, yes, try to be, there are like a brand new branch that has developed for the past 4 or 5 years of, you know, that's called like content strategy. And in higher education, because we have like so much content, there's been like, there is a specialization that is really happening in different institutions where you have like professionals whose job is really to look at the content, look at your audience, their needs, and really make sure that you deliver that content in the best way and at the right time. The timing is really important. It can make the difference between a very successful operation or initiative or campaign and a total flop. We don't know. Well, thank you very much.